You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Washington to Hollywood and right back to Wisconsin, it's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. Connecting the dots on the stories shaping our world with smart takes, sharp humor, and plenty of personality.
You know, I really expected more professional behavior from you.
It's news and culture without the noise.
Yeah, I'm on!
Here's Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach.
Dude!
Welcome to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, it's great to have you here with us tonight. I am Pete Schwabe, sitting across the state from Mr. Greg Bach, coming to you live from Radio Park. It's Radio Park, right, Greg, in Racine?
Correct. Radio Park.
See, I need a nickname like that for my studio here up in the north.
Radio House.
Yeah, that's got a ring to it. I was trying to build Marinetta's Christmas City, USA. That didn't really take off.
Well, you gave it one day. You gave it one show.
No. That goes back a year, and not even people in Marinette like it. They just look at me and they go, I think you can do better than that.
Take a step back here. Yesterday when you were insisting on me calling it Christmas Town, USA? Christmas?
I don't know if I insisted. Yeah,
you Christmas kept on correcting me. You kept on correcting me.
Christmas City.
I thought that this was some sort of like worldwide honor that Marinette had. I didn't realize it was something that just lived within the confines of your brain box, Pete Schwabe.
It's got to start somewhere, dude. We need to be on the map, and it's cold here, and we have pine trees. Why not Christmas City, USA? That's what I'm going for. Well, you've got Radio Park. Give me Christmas City, USA.
There's already a place called Christmas Town, USA. So
that doesn't have the same.
I think you have to fight them.
Christmas City, Christmas Town does not have that kind of mellifluous sort of alliteration. Christmas,
big words.
Christmas,
big words.
City, big words. USA, Maryland, Wisconsin. I love it. All right. we'll get that worked out, folks. But welcome to Nightlight. It is a Tuesday night edition of our fine show that covers current events and some entertainment. And hopefully we make your drive home or, your evening a little happier. Greg, mm-hmm. When you think of this show, do you think of mom and dad gathering the kids around the radio listening to Nightlight?
Pour some water on the cable. We got to get the radio working. Pete and Greg are on.
Mom's made a nice meatloaf. Yeah. What about you, Dom?
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. You know, let's go around. You know, yeah, exactly. Whatever.
Well, you can't fake enthusiasm like that.
Wow. I know that my mom listens, so that's, you know.
So does mine. My mom listens too.
Mom and her that. and her companion, but I don't know, Dennis. We'll call him Dennis. That's his name. they listen and they send me text messages letting me know they enjoy it. So to a certain degree, yes.
I love that. And that your mom texted the show the other night. That was
she
wonderful.
Did exactly, exactly. So we're very appreciative of that. I would love that to be the case because, you know, I grew up with stories like that. Like, oh, back on Saturday nights, we'd listen to the Grand Old Opry, and that was all we did. We'd stop everything we were doing, and we'd get the battery, hook it up to the car, then hook it up to the radio because we only had one radio, and we only had one battery. So
I love that.
Maybe we bring that back for America, the idea of just sitting around, listening to the radio.
Put your phone down. Turn the TV off.
Unless you're listening to us via the Civic Media app, and that's very simple. Get the Civic Media app, and you can listen through your phone or your tablet or your device of choice. It's absolutely free. You can call, text, leave a voice message. You can also enter into contests. From what I understand, there's a new text win contest coming down the pike, but listen more for details. But yeah, it's appointment listening. That's what I would love to call it.
I love
appointment
that.
Listening.
It's a can't miss. I want to say, too, Greg, tonight we should give away some Chicago tickets. Chicago, well, and that's Jason Chef. I'm sorry.
Jason
Chicago.
Yeah.
It's Jason Chef, who basically was the soul of Chicago for 30 years or so.
Yeah.
And we had the pleasure of interviewing him last week. He is performing here in Christmas City, USA, Marinette, Wisconsin, this coming Saturday night. And I'm going to introduce him at the Community Rec Center. So come on out, folks. If you want tickets, text in, let's say Chicago. Text in the word Chicago. And we can give you up to four.
We'll
tickets.
Pick a winner. We'll pick a winner.
Just put in Chicago in the text, and then Dom will get your information, and we'll and we've got more to give away throughout the week, though. So it'll be fun. We have a great show tonight, though, too, Greg.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, we do. We have such an amazing show ahead of us. Tonight, after the 5:30 news, we are going to be speaking to, I want to get his name correctly here. Where did his name go?
Cortland Dahl, baby.
There it is, Cortland Dahl. He'll be talking to us. He is a researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and his area of expertise is meditation. He is the creator of the Healthy Minds program. Healthy Minds is a well-being training program that integrates insight from scientific research with a comprehensive path of contemplative training. So, like, to me, that was interesting because when you think of research and that kind of thing, you don't really put mindfulness and meditation into that you know stew pot. It's usually those are two separate things, spirituality versus science. But have a great discussion with Cortland coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be. He was great to talk to. Yeah. He's just a guy like there are people you meet in your life where I kind of like wish they were neighbors. Like mm-hmm. I would love to pick his brain periodically, you know, and just kind of have that around me to motivate me to meditate more.
I call that a friend crush, and crush does not mean anything romantic. It just means like you meet someone where you're like, man, I really want to be friends with you. Can we just hang out? I'd like to just hang out once. That'd be cool. And then you tell your spouse, you're like, you know who's really cool? Cortland. He's really cool, man. We should invite him over for dinner sometime. Oh, man, I show him my garage and all my tools. Like, that's to me what yeah. like, you just want. Because it's very hard to make new friends as an older person. When you get older, it's just more difficult. And when you meet that person, you're like, I want to be friends with them. You're like, I really want to be friends with that person. So,
and you feel weird about it almost.
Yes.
Even though there's nothing weird about it. You just want a cool friend, not even cool, like Fonzie cool. Like you want someone who's interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you want I used to always say like, if there's a plumber. I got a leaky pipe. Oh, I'll come over and help you out. Oh, I got a back problem. My brother's a chiropractor. He lives down the road. When you're a comedian, mm-hmm. that doesn't work.
Nobody wants to be your friend.
Nobody's going to come over and go, hey, my daughter's a little down. She broke up with her boyfriend. Will you mind going over and cracking a few jokes?
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it clean. She's in high school. So, you know, I don't know. It's awkward.
Hey, man, you're in comedy. Do you know Jerry Seinfeld? We're in a company party. Do you have his phone number? No, I don't have his phone number. He changed his number because I kept calling him because I wanted him to be my friend. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just a weird dynamic. But I totally get the friend crush thing, dude.
Yeah,
and there's
absolutely.
Nothing. I appreciate you putting yourself out there and saying that. That's awesome. All right, so we got Cortland Dahl. Dom, let's quit messing around. The kidding around is pretty much over. Let's get to our Nightlight question of the night.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
Okay, according to Rolling Stone magazine, website, whatever, Yummy 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 by the Ohio Express was the worst song from the 60s. So tonight's question is, what do you think is the worst song ever? You can let us know at 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, or let us know on the app that Greg just talked about and sang its praises. It's very easy to use. It's awesome. If you're watching the radio on YouTube, Facebook, or X Twitter, you can drop us a stream comment, but let us know what you think is the worst song ever. We'll read your texts early in hour number two, so don't go away. How's that, Greg? Did I cover it? How do you think it's going so far?
So far, so good. I did want to tell people, though, in the second hour, we've got some cool stuff happening.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about a story regarding Goodwill, doing a quiz that Dom, our producer Dom in Madison, has put. Stop it with okay. that.
Ooh, that was right. a devilish yeah. devious
Sorry, I was
laugh.
Just excited.
I'm going to make you look like fools, fools.
Exactly.
And then this is, I mean, we're in just starting week three. This is Tuesday of week three of Nightlight 2.0. And one of the things that, you know, we realize hasn't happened is Pete and I have known each other for a while. We've talked on very many occasions. We've been on each other's shows, but we don't know enough about each other. And tonight we're going to ask some questions. So it's going to be Greg and Pete get to know each other.
A little icebreaker.
Yeah, a little icebreaker, you know.
It'll be fun. Yeah. And I've said, I'm an open book, so bring it, baby.
Okay.
All right, so you got that to look forward to in hour number two, folks. It's great to have you here.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, though, let's get to our three big things.
The first big story.
It's only week three, Greg. It's only week three.
Folks, I am very excited about this one. This was reported in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel late last week, but I thought we should talk about this because I think it's great. Amtrak could begin Madison Rail service as early as 2030. I think the more train in Wisconsin, the better, Pete. The plans to begin the Madison Rail service have been in the works for years, but were revived in 2021 as a result of the bipartisan infrastructure law. Remember when that happened?
It's a weird word.
Yeah, exactly. We were recipient of part of $102 billion in federal funding, and part of that is going to go to getting Madison a rail service. And I think that I think one of the darkest days in Wisconsin's history, in recent memory, I should say, is when we poo-pooed and canceled the commuter rail service, or the light rail service that we were going to put into the state that we had all the money allocated for once again. And Scott Walker on like day one or two said, nope, goodbye. And then all that money went away. So did the jobs. So did the transportation. We could go back in time and relive those worlds, but let's not. Let's move ahead. 2030, we're getting more train access. And that's on top of the fact that the Borealis train service that goes to Minneapolis is absolutely breaking records right now. People love that train service.
It's a cash cow. And this is like what frustrates me about this, Greg, is it's about 20 years too late. If it's going to start in 2030, we could have had this, you know, let's say it would have been done 2014 or whatever when the funds went through and all the construction, but it is so, I love traveling by train. I love it's just not a hassle. You can do other stuff while you're riding. I do find it weird that Madison doesn't already have a stop. You know, there's a stop in Columbus. I thought that was like on purpose. I don't know what the thinking about that was.
This is going to be the world famous Hiawatha train. So that's the one that goes from Milwaukee to Chicago. I've taken that train many
Me
times
too. Love it.
And I think you add a stop in Madison. Oh my god, you like Chicago, there's Chicago, Sturtevant, the airport, Milwaukee, and then you move that right up to Madison, maybe one stop in the middle there. I mean, that is going to be, that would be so good for so many people. I think this is, you're right, it feels too late, but if we can get it done, I think that would be fantastic. If we can get a rail service up to Canada too, oh my goodness. Come on now. Yeah.
It's good for the economy too. I don't know if people realize that. Like, we're supposed to. I read about almost a year ago, we were supposed to get a line from Milwaukee up to Green Bay too, which would be fantastic. I mean, the Fox Valley has like 500,000 people.
Yep.
I would like to see them go north too and just make the whole state accessible, or as much of it as you can, where all the business stuff happens and where there's hustle and bustle, you know.
I mean, I had to explain to friends of mine who are like, yeah, get rid of the train, we don't need it. I said, okay, here we go. This is how it works. You get rid of the train. That money doesn't go away. It goes to other states, and that's what it did. It went to other states. On top of that, you're talking about the construction jobs that came from the train. You talk about all of the construction that has to accommodate like things at stops. So people are going to be building like mini malls and things like that, and the jobs that come, like all the things that we lost because of it is very comprehensible and very, very right there in your face. Lots of money lost because of it. Hopefully this can make up some sort of whatever. I'm just happy this is happening. I think this is very important for Wisconsin.
I hope so too, buddy. Yep. I think it's better late than ever, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Where's the line? All right. We are coming back after a very short break to talk about two more big topics. Folks, you don't want to miss this. The train was just the icing on the... It's not the icing on the cake. It's the start. We are coming right back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network. Just for one day. We can be us. Just for one day. I have everything.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Today is going to be the day that they're going to throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you got to do. I don't believe that anybody
Welcome back.
feels the way I do.
I was kind of jamming, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're on the radio. You got to start talking now. So great to have you with us, folks. It is Tuesday night here on the Civic Media Network, and you've got Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. And we are discussing some current news stories today, and we just talked about the train coming back to it'll run through Madison, which is great, but we've got other stuff to get to, don't we, Greg?
We got two other big ones.
The second big story.
I saw this today. I don't know that I was surprised by it, but it was a poll that I saw on Yahoo about Democratic frontrunners.
Oh my God!
In the 2026. And listen, I have my thoughts on the Democrats drive me crazy sometimes, Merrick Garland. But
subtle.
They just can't like. Okay, so I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I was a little surprised. 23% of the people in a poll said they favor Kamala as the front runner. 19% said Gavin Newsom.
Okay.
10% said Pete Buttigieg, who I like a lot.
I like Pete Buttigieg a lot. In fact, I've come around to him. Like when he, like a couple of years ago, I said, no, I just didn't dig him. Now I'm like, maybe.
Yeah.
He would, I just think he's too measured for America.
Boy, that's a great way to put it, Greg. He just talks, he's very sensible. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you have issues with Newsom. I love that he gave Trump some of the business of what Trump does, and that resonated. I thought Kamala, in a short time, ran a good campaign. I'm not saying she did it perfectly, but there's other people here, too. AOC got 7% of those surveyed. Yeah. Then you had a 5% tie between Josh Shapiro, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, Josh Shapiro, the Pennsylvania governor, and New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. I'm surprised he's in
those
guys. Yeah.
Pass.
They each got 5%. And J.B. Pritzker got 4%, Gretchen Whitmer, 3%. So there you go.
I would, of this group, I mean, this is like we're a little less than 3 years away, I should say. Oh, God.
If there is an election, by the way.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. It's so painful. It's so painful in my brain. Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, and Mark Kelly are the ones that I would be like, yes, let's bring them more to the front and have more conversations. Gavin Newsom is a great governor for California. I just think that I don't know if he would go over well in America. AOC, very controversial. Don't at me. I have my reasons. And by the way, I don't dislike any of these people. I worked in campaigning. I worked in government. I know how these work, and I know what it's like to like look and say like, all right, who's better? Who should, like someone like a J.B. Pritzker should stay the governor of Illinois. I think he's doing a fantastic job as the governor of Illinois.
Right.
And, you know, this is a bigger conversation for down the road, but I just, you know, this is amazing they did this. And I'm very surprised that Kamala Harris came out on top.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any anger towards her. And again, Biden dropped out kind of late. You can't put it all on Harris, on Kamala. But I'd like to hear more from Mark Kelly. I agree with you. And a lot of it is I like what these people do in their lane. But are they electable? Are they electable nationally to win the presidency? Because if you're a Democrat, that's what you want. You want someone who's electable.
Yes. You do. I mean, and that's just how it works. I mean, you want the person you want. I get that. But are they the best person who can – are they the same person who can appeal to the Los Angeles liberal versus the Oklahoma versus the Wisconsin versus the Rhode Island? Like, you have to look at all of that before you say, this is our person. And
right.
I think it's part of the – either it was part of the failure of – the Kamala Harris campaign, or just the fact that the Democrats saying no primary necessary, folks, here you go. And people were upset about that.
Right. Yeah. That would have been interesting if they tried to squeeze a primary in there too. I know that was a complaint of a lot of people, goodness. But there was such a small window anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we get to our,
let's get to the final thing.
Dom, please.
The third big story.
In the time we have left, coming out of the Wisconsin Public Radio, Jeff Robbins has the byline, prescribing improv to improve patient-doctor relationships. I see what they did there. So basically, associate professor and director of education and innovation at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public, well, that's a very long title. A lot of these individuals have a very long title, teaches an elective course in improvisational theater. And she has said that they are basically working with doctors to do this, to help them create better bedside manner, better attitude, relationship with their patients. And what do you think about that, Pete? Improv as a teaching tool?
Well, we just talked about politicians staying in their lanes. I think doctors, mm-hmm. if they don't go crazy with it, like I know a lot of people that take improv classes do it for just to interact better with people. So yeah, why not doctors? As long as they don't work blue when they take suggestions from their patients. I like a doctor who just tells me what I want to hear, and they don't do that anymore. But when I was younger, I remember I had a lump in my ear. It was frostbite. And I go, you don't think it's cancer? And he goes, I'm virtually certain it's not. And that's with no tests or whatever. I walked out of there like, yes. So I don't know if I want a doctor cracking jokes.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's so much about cracking jokes. It's just about, to me, and this is what I learned from improv, because I took improv because I wanted to be a lawyer. And one of my friends said, you should take an improv class. Well, I wanted to do comedy, but I used it also as the excuse saying, I want to be a lawyer. And I think it's less about comedy and just more about how to work in a flow with people. And like, you know, it's people, you know, doctors aren't the easiest people to communicate with sometimes. I think that's very much true. And I think this is just more to build their skills at creating relationships with their patients, instead of being like, whackety schmackety, take two and call me in the morning. Yeah, so I think it's cool. I think everyone should take an improv course, period. I think everyone should do it. I think it'll help you greatly in your life. So that's just mine.
Fun. It's fun too. And but then that begs the question, do you have to teach the patients the yes and theory? Because what if they shut you down? What if you're going into a scene as a doctor before you give someone earth-shattering news and they shut you down? It's just bad manners.
That's very, very bad manners. Bad improv. Bad improv.
All right. We are coming right back after news, sports, and the weather with Cortland Dahl. Great interview, folks. Don't miss this. We are coming right back. This is Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. Our question of the night, what is the worst song ever written? Share it with us. Be part of the show. It's Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
Research. It spans from very geeky stuff where we put advanced meditators and new meditators in the brain scanner, and we look at what's going on in their brains when they meditate and see how it affects their overall well-being and mental health, but also, of course, their brain function. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we work in systems. We've done a lot of work in the educational systems throughout the U.S. We've done work in healthcare systems. And there we're looking not only at how practices like meditation affect our individual mental health and our ability to flourish, but even systems, even looking at how the individual well-being of a person ripples out into an entire system, again, like education. So we do all sorts of things, but I would say the main thing these days is we created an app called the Healthy Minds Program. We did this for research. We thought it would just be kind of a small thing for our own studies. Mm-hmm. But it ended up getting picked up by the New York Times and was recommended as one of their top meditation apps. And now we have hundreds of thousands of people who have used it, and we have millions upon millions of data points. So we can ask very different scientific questions with that kind of data. So there's actually a lot going on, and I could geek out on any one of those little threads, but it's quite a wide terrain, you could say.
Listen, feel free to geek out as much as you want. I'm truly fascinated by this. And To dumb it down even more for someone like me, there are different kinds of meditation. There's sitting meditation, active meditation. How, you know, an active meditation, as I understand it, is kind of being aware of your feet hitting the ground. Or you gave one example, folding laundry. You can meditate while you're folding laundry. Is it just focusing on what you're doing, or what is the practice?
You literally could meditate anytime and anywhere. Right now, for example, you gave the example of just noticing the feelings in your body. So if you feel what's going on, like the sensations of your feet resting on the floor, it's the simplest thing. You just activated networks in your brain that are doing basically two different things. One is around intention. Rather than letting the world pull your attention as it does all the time, you are in the driver's seat of what's happening with your attention. So when you choose where to place your attention, you are activating brain networks that will allow you to focus and allow you to resist the pull of distraction. So it's not about paying attention to your breath, or in this case, to your feet. It's just you're in the driver's seat. You're choosing what you want to be happening in your own mind, and you're training that capacity. But you could also equally in this moment practice a very different skill, like appreciation is one of my favorites because it's so easy to do. So normally our brain is wired to have a negativity bias. There's important evolutionary reasons why that is the case. It's not a personal failing. It's just kind of how we're wired. But you can change that by choosing to notice the positive. So again, it goes back to intention. And I'm looking at you gentlemen and we're talking and I could think, wow, this is great. These guys have chosen to talk about this. I hope it's beneficial to people. How wonderful that they're making space for these important conversations. And then right there, I just chose to orient my mind to something positive. That's the skill of appreciation. So you could do that while you're walking, going for a walk and walking your dog. You could do it while you're folding the laundry. You could do it while you're commuting to work, or you could do it as a formal sitting meditation practice. So again, there's many different skills and you can practice those skills many different ways. And sitting meditation is just one of those ways, a powerful one, but just one.
So excuse me one sec, Greg. So
go on.
Just to stick with this while we're on it, the sitting meditation, how is that different than the active? Is it just you're focusing, reflecting, breathing, like you say, measure or being aware of your breath, that kind of stuff? How do the two differentiate?
So what sitting meditation uniquely brings is that you are completely immersed in training whatever that skill might be. So if it's mindfulness, for example, you're training these attentional networks that I mentioned, you're learning to focus and resist distraction. Or if you're doing appreciation, as I just mentioned, you're kind of immersed in that. So the benefits of sitting meditation is that you're not doing anything else. You're totally focused just on that inner process of whatever form of meditation you're doing. And that's the unique benefit of a formal sitting meditation. Active meditation, you don't get that immersive quality. So you're probably not going to feel like you're as relaxed or as immersed in the experience as you would be if you were just in a quiet space doing it. But the unique benefit of active meditation is that you're linking that skill with your everyday life. So it's not just like a nice little vacation you have for 20 minutes in the morning and then you're totally distracted and reactive the rest of the day. You're learning how to practice that skill of appreciation or how to be less distracted and more calm and centered while you're going about your day. So each of them has its own unique benefits. They're just different. They do different things and they even activate slightly different networks in the brain.
I want to go back to something you just said about the wired for negativity evolutionary, on an evolutionary scale. And I've talked to people about this and something that I've done for myself is trying to practice more gratitude instead of looking at things as maybe a small inconvenience to say, hey, I have this thing. I can do this thing. I have a house. I have a car, whatever it may be. But that is work. And it almost feels like part of therapy, too, where you have to work to find the good. Why is it that we are hardwired to immediately take on the negative then?
Yeah, it's a great question. Simply put, we did not evolve as a species to be happy. We evolved to survive. So our brain and our biology, our nervous systems have all evolved over time to keep us safe. And the way they've done that is to become exceptionally good at detecting threats. Mm-hmm. So our brains, in many ways, are prediction machines and threat detection machines. And that's good if you're foraging in the forest and on the lookout for wild animals, or you're in some physically dangerous situation. But although our minds are good at detecting threats, they're exceedingly bad at discerning emotional threats or psychological threats from physical threats. And so oftentimes our nervous system is responding the same way as though we're being physically attacked when it's somebody said something snarky at the office, or mm-hmm. we got into an argument with our partner or a friend, or we're just doom scrolling and reading about all the scary stuff in the world these days. And our nervous system doesn't really know that. It's acting as though we need to fight or flight or flee or simply freeze. But really, where are you going to run? Who are you going to fight? What's going to happen if you freeze? Like, it's not the correct response, right? But it's what our nervous system is telling us to do. So again, it makes sense in a certain context. We don't want to lose that. But oftentimes we get stuck when we're chronically in this fight or flight response. It's like our nervous system is chronically activated and it just doesn't know how to adapt to the environment. And meditation is one powerful way to help it learn to be more adaptable to what's actually happening in the moment.
That's great.
Yeah.
This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach, and you are you're joining us now. We're talking meditation with Cortland Dahl. He's a PhD and leading expert in mindfulness and the science of well-being. He, and he's a research scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So how is this different than transcendental meditation, where you have a mantra and you, I believe you do have to sit, or at least that's how I do it poorly. What are the differences between the two, and what are the benefits that you might get from one that you might not get from the other?
So again, you could think about meditation as being this very, very broad umbrella category under which there's many subtypes of meditation, just like there's many forms of exercise and they do different things. So transcendental meditation is one specific form of meditation. It is in a family of meditation, what we call the attentional practices, where the main focus is you are orienting to some particular experience, which could be your breath. It could be, as in this case, you're repeating a mantra in your mind over and over. It could be other things. It could even be a visual object. And you're simply resting your attention. You're basically focusing your mind, resting your mind. And what happens through those practices is your mind becomes very still. You're training your attentional capacity. So part of that process is you're noticing the pull of distraction. You're bringing it back. And you're basically rewiring your brain to be more focused and less distracted. There's all sorts of benefits to that. And it's very different than cultivating appreciation or a sense of meaning and purpose in life. So again, there's many forms, and that's just one very powerful form of meditation. But again, just one of many.
A question I would have is, I feel like there are people out there who could say, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I love meditation. I don't enjoy the science is not for me. And then people who say science, I'm science. Meditation is just what they hokum, however they want to refer to it. But how do you, as a research scientist in this field, blend the two for people on both sides to understand, to say you are connected in more ways than you understand, and this is how you are and present your findings?
Well, one common thing you could find in the world's more spiritual meditative traditions and equally in science is we're basically trying to understand the mind and how it works. So that is equally true, you know, if you're into Buddhist psychology and you're meditating, you know, in that tradition, or really any meditative tradition, you're just getting familiar with your own mind. Mm-hmm. And as scientists, we're basically doing the same thing. We're just using different tools. So they're very powerful actually together. Each of them is the scientific perspective is giving us a very unique vantage point, a very unique set of tools to better understand the mind, how we can optimize these teachings and practices so they simply work for us better. And similarly, there's this accumulated knowledge and wisdom and experience in the world's meditative traditions that are in which there's a tremendous amount of wisdom. And we're trying to connect those traditions so we can create a little more cross-pollination between the both.
Nice.
Wow. What was your experience like in, I think you lived in China for 8 years and you studied with the Buddhists. Actually, we have to do a quick break, but think about that. And I also want to ask you about the challenges of meditation in this day and age with smartphones and all that kind of stuff. And Greg, I'm sure you have more questions as well.
Loads of them. So many questions.
What's it like being a guy that people just want to be around to get information out of you? Because... All right, we're talking with Cortland Dahl. He's a PhD and leading expert in mindfulness, meditation, and the science of well-being. We will have more with our guest after this very short break. I would encourage you all to take this time and reflect and meditate, because we are coming right back on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
There you go. Dom, nice change up there, buddy. Hey, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Our guest is Cortland Dahl, an expert on mindfulness and meditation. He has also studied in Tibet and with refugee settlements in India and Nepal. What was your time like there Cortland, and how was it different than here? And, you know, that's kind of the birth of meditation, isn't it? That area of the world?
Yeah, very much. I spent almost a decade living in Tibetan refugee settlements all over the place, but mainly in Kathmandu, Nepal, where I'm actually headed in just a couple of days. Man, it's just a completely different world. And I would say the biggest thing is that the value system is just different. And there's many, I mean, we could talk for hours just about that, but one of the things that will always stay with me is being in a culture where the value of human beings, where our sense of worth as human beings is not tied to what we do and accomplish, but more to who we are. And there's this whole kind of distinction between doing and being, and seeing that we just don't have to be on this endless march of getting stuff done to be of value. Whereas I feel like in the modern world, certainly in the US, you know, where I grew up, it's kind of like if you're not productive, if you're not just doing something active, you just don't have any value. You're kind of viewed as sort of worthless. And this was just a totally different value system. And they were getting a lot of stuff done. It's not like they were sitting around. So it's not like that leads you in the, you know, to just being unproductive, but yet your sense of worth can be located somewhere else, not in the to-do list.
Is that an American quality, or do you see that in other countries around? Not just like from what you saw in your studies, but like I know exactly what you're talking about. But is that an American thing, or is that in a lot of countries around the world where you see it's your value is tied to who you are and what you create, essentially?
I think perhaps it's uniquely intense in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But whether it originated here or we've successfully exported it everywhere around the world, I've traveled in more than 40 countries and lived all over the place. And I can say it's alive and well in many countries, you know, pretty much every continent in the world. Maybe Antarctica's, you know, holding out for a little while longer. But, you know, like I think it's everywhere, but there's places where it's more or less intense. And certainly here, you know, we have this narrative, of, you know, you got to lift yourself up by the bootstraps and do it yourself. You're on your own. You got to get stuff done. And and it creates a pretty massive blind spot about when it comes to mental health and well-being and what actually really supports us and to lead fulfilling lives.
I think that definitely can speak to the point you made about hooking onto negativity. If you live in that kind of mindset where you need to live in that world of I'm defined by what I create and whatnot, it can create a place where you don't accept gratitude or joy immediately. You have to find the back end, like, how is this going to hurt me? And I think that's something that is very American in our distrust of each other, where we could very much benefit from saying, hey, why did this person come to me? Like you said, they came to me, they wanted to talk to me. Where's the joy? Where's the happiness in there? And I think that's a really good way of looking at it, as far as at least in this country with what's going on right now.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we have an abundance of progress, but at the expense of well-being and mm-hmm. our ability to even just have some sense of emotional balance in life. I mean, there's a lot of costs to it. And I think you can have both, but we've just prioritized one at the expense of the other. So we need some kind of rebalancing for sure.
I'm someone tied to my smartphone. I love to watch color television. I binge watch a lot of stuff. It's kind of been my adult entertainment life. But what do you tell people how important meditation is? Do you tell them that it's even more important now in the age of technology and that we have to disconnect and decompress a little bit? Or can you meditate while watching an episode of The Jeffersons?
Both. I mean, like I said, you can meditate anytime, anywhere, right now. If you pay attention, if you bring attention to your breath right now, or if you hear the sound of my voice and you are intentional about it, you're basically meditating. And again, there's many ways you could do that. So you definitely can meditate when you're using your phone. You can meditate when you're watching TV. The challenge is that technology in particular, and specifically things like social media, are architected and built to hijack your prefrontal cortex, which means they're designed to undermine intentionality. So while you can, in theory, do it anytime and anywhere, you can be present and focused, we're living in a world where our attentional networks and our brains are being hacked continuously by the surroundings we're in. So I would say, you know, we're in the world we live in. Like, nothing's going to change that. We have phones. We're now in the world of AI. That's just the way things are. That's fine. I think the most important practice and skill to have in the 21st century is intention. Be cognizant of the way this stuff is built and be intentional about how you use it. Let me give one very concrete example. I was using my phone as an alarm clock for a while. And I realized that I would pick up my phone first thing in the morning to turn off my alarm. And before I knew it, I'd be checking my email and checking messages. And then I'm scrolling through my, and I didn't intend to do that, right? I just was sucked down this little rabbit hole. And I realized I just need to leave it outside my bedroom. I don't bring my phone in my bedroom. It does not enter my bedroom anymore. And that one thing, being intentional about that one thing, has made a huge difference. So it doesn't have to be that. It might be something different. But the key is we're just cognizant of what's going on and we're making choices rather than the technology dictating how we use it, which is usually what happens if we're not intentional about what we're doing.
Wow.
I mean,
so start small. Yeah.
Yes. I think that's something I've learned over the past just few years is something where instead of looking at a problem from its entirety, look at how I can create solutions small in whatever I'm trying to fix. And as you say, like, you know, I have a brother-in-law who's a neurological oncologist, and he tells me all the time, and he says, Greg, he says, put your phone down 3 hours, or he says, put your phone down an hour before you go to bed, turn off the TV 2 hours before you go to bed, and stop working 3 hours before you go to bed. You will sleep better. And to me, that seems like such an overwhelming thing to do, but instead looking and saying like, all right, tonight, I'm just going to try to stop working 3 hours if I can do that. I think that's the other thing, Cortland, is that people see the whole problem is so overwhelming. They don't even want to try to hit a solution. Whereas what you're saying is find a small portion. What can I do to fix that small portion and then take on another thing and then create a larger solution, which I think will make you happier in the long run.
Great stuff. Cortland, thank you so much. Keep up the great work. We would love to make this kind of a regular, semi-regular thing. We can't offer a signing bonus, but we love your intellect and your advice. It's outstanding. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been great to be here. Thank you both.
All right, that's Cortland Dahl, PhD, an expert on mindfulness, meditation, and the science of well-being, something I would like to get better at. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. We are coming right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.